I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And this one in the books. Bears 23, Panthers 16. It's not quite a fade to black. Who wants another? You want another fade to black? I mean, this was just a hard-fought win in the NFC, and they're 8-1 in the last nine NFC games and 5-0 in the NFC for the first time since the Super Bowl year of Lovie Smith in 2006, and the defense does have a big day with the three. You needed three takeaways today.
Your TV screen just faded to black.
Okay, fade to black. Bears win it 23-16.
We're back with more of the Prop Swap post-game show with Hub Arkish and Patrick Manley on Sports Radio 670 The Score, presented by PNC Bank, the official bank of the Chicago Bears.
That, of course, Jeff Joniak and Tom Thayer on the final play of the game, talking on our sister station, WBBM News Radio 780. 105.9 on your FM dial. Good to have you back here with us now for the best post game in town, our Prop Swap post game show presented by New Mail. Patrick Manley alongside. I'm Hub Arkish. We're taking your calls at 312-644-6767. And Patrick, we're going to get back to the phone lines here. Unfortunately, my caller screen dropped there for a minute, so I don't have the name, but Julio, if you want to punch up that next line, and John, I think, is in Westerville. John, how you doing?
Hey, how y'all doing? Enjoying the show. The defense played great today, and not only that, if you look at the Bears need to get another receiver, another left tackle, and also A. Robinson, and if you notice, there was no play-action pass today on first down. I'll hang up and hear what you got to say. They got to get another receiver because we just can't get over. We can't throw downfield still. Robinson is not a downfield post receiver, so we need to pay him. Need to get another receiver, get another offensive left tackle, and I think the Bears will make it to the Super Bowl. I'll hear what you got to say.
Whoa, John, you threw me with that last line. I think that'd be a better football team if they do some of the things you're talking about. The Super Bowl is a big ask. Pat, the one thing I would say, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on John's comments, is that play action ain't going to take you very far when you can't run the football. I mean, it's really that simple. You know, we bitch and moan about the inability to run the ball for a lot of different reasons, but one of the hidden costs is that it really hurts your passing game in a number of ways, and it takes away play action. And so while I agree with you, John, I think it can be, very effective when it's set up properly. The Panthers aren't going to worry about play action if they know they can stop the Bears' running game.
Yeah, and I just as we've talked about it, Matt Nagy's just not going to run the ball. He tried early a couple times. I think it was two series in a row he went – with run on first down, it was stuffed for a no gain or negative 1 yard. So, he's not going to continue to call the run. But to get the play action running, you have to run the ball more. Even if it's 0 yards, you have to have the linebackers respecting Nick Foles handing the ball off. And I just think with, I'm trying to find the stats here of how many rushes they did have. I think it turned out to be a little bit more at the end because the game, they're trying to run their 4-minute offense. But going into that, there was a limited number of rushes. And you still have to attempt it to be able to do the play action pass to get the linebackers to trust it. And it just doesn't seem to me like he's going to do it. He just likes to put, four wides out there with a running back and let the five guys up front protect and see if those wide receivers can win their one-on-one matches. And I agree with the caller, too, that some of these other guys, they've got to win their one-on-one matches. You look at that last 3rd-and-2, it's just the wideouts lined up trying to win man-to-man matches. Most accurate ball either to help them, but you know, if there's other guys out there that he could feel comfortable throwing to, that would be more helpful as well. But it's just not that way. I mean, Allen Robinson's his number one guy. He's going to go to him in the key situations, and you're hoping he wins that one-on-one matchup. And that last throw just didn't work out today. But it's just, again, let's go back to it, Hub. We're still nitpicking this team, but they're 5-1. Yeah. It was a win. It was a win we expected to happen today. When you take talent versus talent, and where the Bears were talented compared to where the Panthers were talented, you just hope they would be able to run the ball more, looking at where the Panthers were ranked defensively in the run game. But they won the game, but there's a lot of things they can still get better at. And I hope Matt Nagy kind of says that again, you know, like he did after last week in the post-game press conference, where he talked about, hey, we're not good enough yet. We've got to get better. And that showed again today offensively.
Yeah, and guys, if you caught any of us on the Bet Rivers Sportsbook pregame show, this game went, Pat, almost exactly the way we laid it out. Yes. Everything we talked about happened because everything we said relative to the running game was conditioned on if they can do it. And when they can't, you know what the results are going to be. But other than that, it was everything we're looking for. You do have a 5-1 football team. The odds on them making the playoffs are not astronomical, but they're astronomically great right now. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see what happens. Now, can they win a playoff game? Probably not the way they're playing right now, but that depends on who you get to. I mean, you know, what if you're the first wild card and you get the winner of the NFC East? You'd probably be favored on the road, you know, and should right. be. So, you know, you just got to wait and see. But I think to the John's point, or the my answer to your point, John, is that Matt Nagy is in a classic catch-22 in that he doesn't want to run the football. He won't run the football. He can't win without running the football. But he's not running the football because they're not good at it. And they're like wasted plays, and they keep getting themselves into third and long, which is hard no matter what you do. So I understand his dilemma. The problem and the reason that we focus on it so much is because the person most responsible for their inability to run the football is Matt Nagy. I mean, you know, he's the head coach. This is his job. Figure out a way to make the running game work. And Pat, I'm going to get back to the phones in just a minute. But remember, last Friday morning, Matt caught us all, a week ago Friday morning, caught us all a little bit off guard. He came out pissed. He was mad. Mm-hmm. They'd won a big game. And he talked about details, details, and details. Okay. You cannot burn a timeout in the first quarter in the other team's end of the field because you can't get a play on the field. Then come back and get called for delay of game because you can't get the playoff and then have the play fail. Those are details, 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 and they're all on the coaches. And so, you know, his adamant, you know, stance that we're going to get this fixed. Well, they didn't. It's 10 days later, and those are details that the coaches screwed up.
No, and that's a problem because, I mean, if you're coaching, you're supposedly coaching that hard all week to take care of those details, and then they rear their ugly head again. You know, that's a coaching problem. But I'm also, you know, being a former player, you got to put some on the players as well. They've got to listen. They've got to do the right thing. They got to be paying attention. But the coaches got to have everybody in the right spot, everybody working on the sideline listening. Even defensively, it happened, Hub. They had a couple times they got caught with 12 men on the field. They were trying to sub packages out, and they got caught. And that's details as well, not on the offense. That's on the defense. That's just team details, and they can't have that. If they want to be great, you can't have those issues. To me, what this team reminds me of is the 2005 Bears I was a part of. We had a great defense, and we had an offense that just couldn't do much. You know, poor Kyle Orton, being the rookie, was doing as much as he could, and we just couldn't score points. But we kept winning games. We got the playoffs to get knocked out early. But, you know, that's where this team is right now. They're a playoff team. As you were talking, that the chances of getting the playoffs look pretty good, but I just don't see them going deep at all. This offense is the key to getting something done in the postseason to see if we can have some fun here in Chicago.
All righty. Let's get to Herman in Homewood. Herman, we thank you for dialing us up. How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good, thank you.
You guys just covered one of my points with this lack of detail that Nagy and Pagano couldn't seem to show. But my main point is Jalen Johnson. I was very high on the Bears drafting him. But since the first game against Detroit, when he got ran over by one of Detroit receivers, he shows no inclination to tackle. He is the worst tackling DB I can ever recall. He either doesn't know how to, or he's just committed to not do it. but I would like to know, why isn't he being held accountable for his lack of tackling? I'll hang up and listen to you. Thank you.
Herman, I got to be honest. It's not something I've really noticed. I'm more focused on this kid out on the island playing cornerback. And today he went to school. There was no question about that. He got just killed by the officials on that one non-pass interference. But there were other plays where he did get beat. But what I loved was he kept coming back and he made some plays too. And I think, you know, Pat, that the Bears got a really good one there. I have to be honest. Maybe I'm missing it, but I hadn't even really focused much on his tackling.
No, I haven't either. But I'll tell you one thing. Most DBs drive me crazy because they're not good tacklers. You know, they always throw in their shoulder and they never wrap up. They never use their arms. But that's just what I see all the way across the NFL, and that's just the way it is. But, he had a rough game. But I think this is what we expected as a rookie, right? A second-round rookie as corner in the NFL, there's going to be a big learning curve for this young man. And like you said, the thing that he does is bounces back. I mean, right after one of the big throws to him, he comes around and makes a nice play where he sticks his arm around the receiver and knocks the ball out. And I think it ended the drive and they had to punt. But he's got a great mentality for the corner position. They're going to get beat. It's how do you bounce back? And, you know, I just think as a rookie, if he's getting beat like he is now, and I don't think it's a whole lot. I think today's game plan was, all right, Matt Rhule and Joe Brady said, we're going to go after Jalen Johnson because that's their weak point, which actually says a lot for this team if he's their weak point, because he's not too terrible. He's not bad. I mean, he's pretty darn good, especially for a rookie, and he's only going to get better. So I just think that speaks volumes for him.
Well, and here's what you got to realize also, guys. Kyle Fuller is playing as well as a cornerback can possibly play. I mean, he is well on his way to another first-team All-Pro selection. And so naturally, the offense is going to attack the other side, you know, particularly when they have a rookie out there. So he is going to be challenged. He's going to be challenged all year long. Robbie Anderson is their number one receiver, and he was on him a good part of the day. And I think the kid is playing, you know, really very well so far as a second-round rookie who started his first game, the first game he was on an NFL roster. Let's go to Palatine and see what Barb is thinking about this afternoon. Barb, how you doing?
Hey, how are you guys?
Good, thank you.
We're great.
Good. My question is, why in the second half did they get away from Cole Kmet? He had the touchdown. He had the reception for the first down. He seems to be an underutilized weapon that they're really not using. And all the feedback from his off-season is that, or from training camp, is that he was outstanding. Just wondering why they're not using him more.
Thank you, Barb. Pat, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I got the same question. I don't get it either, because when he got in there and he got the reps and they got the ball thrown to him, he did great. And I wish I would see him more. Demetrius Harris is a nice tight end, but you drafted Cole Kmet to play more, and I just wish you would see him out there more. There's some routes that Harris is going out for that look like they're intended to go to him. Why aren't they intended to go to Cole Kmet? That's what I don't understand. Why is he not in that position? You know, you drafted him where he is. He was the number one drafted tight end this year in the NFL. He's supposed to have all this ability. Get the ball in his hands and let's see what he can do. Now I'm not understanding why he's not getting more reps, because when he does get in there, he does a nice job. He catches the ball, you know, not many times, but he's catching the ball. He's blocking well. And I think he needs more reps, and I wish they would play him more.
Barb, yeah, I agree with you. I agree with Patrick. The only kind of qualifier or caveat I would put on it is this is one where I do want to go back and watch the tape just because I don't have a snap count yet and don't know. You know, sometimes these guys get a little invisible, especially with the amount of 12 and 13 personnel that they play where you're moving tight ends around. And I actually also don't know when he was on the field how available he was for Nick Foles. So I agree with you. I'd like to see more of him, but this is one where you got to kind of look at the tape and find out. Before I don't want to falsely accuse, Nagy or Clancy Barone or whoever it is without studying the tape first. So let's get one more before we have to break again. Pat, Chris checks in pretty much every week, and he's out in Evanston and with us again today. Chris, we thank you for calling. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Like you said, we 5-1. We'll find out how real we are over the next couple games. My big point today was Kyle Fuller, man. Like you just talked about, the type of football he's playing is shut down. And I can't get used to this new era of football where anytime you make a play like he consistently makes, where it's just bam, bam, his timing is perfect, he drops that shoulder, textbook tackle. It should have been another fumble. Instead, they call a penalty after you know, they go to timeout for the injury, look at it again. And I don't know how much better, you know, a defender can time a tackle and make plays like he's consistently doing. And just, it's like a couple years ago when they got Clay Matthews the same way with about his first 5 sacks. And as far as that last caller, I completely disagree. I mean, I love Jalen Johnson. I think he is outstanding. He got called for that pass interference today, but I was thinking back to last week, he consistently grabs that receiver arm and gets away with it. It's a veteran maneuver to me. I think he's going to be a great ball player.
Well, and you know the best part about it, Chris, because you didn't see it, or at least I didn't see it until we saw the replay. He didn't grab the arm on that pass interference. I think that was, I can't remember if that was Moore or Anderson. I think it was Moore. Moore stuck his arm in there. he was not arm barring him on that play. And I understand, you know, depending on the official's angle, but the fact that both officials blew the call, really frustrating. The only thing that I might disagree with Chris on, Pat, is that I don't know if the illegal hit on Kyle should have been a fumble or if it was an incomplete pass, because I was so busy watching the replay trying to figure out what they were calling that I didn't even look to see if he caught the ball.
I did the same thing. And back to Kyle Fuller, you know what he looks like to me is just the game has even slowed down more for him. You know what I mean? Like he's making these hits, plays that are just, you know, they're exceptional. They're extremely, they're the top of the game. Like you said, he's playing at the top of his game. He's playing at the top of the game in the NFL. And it's just neat when you see guys play that well and you watch them play and the game just slows down for him. It's kind of like Charles Tillman going in to make a tackle with one arm and punch the ball out with the other one. Or, you know, watch when Lance Briggs used to, you know, on third down, when to go through the A-gap and make a big stop. And just the game to those guys slowed down to a different level that guys can't get to. And that's where it looks like to me Kyle Fuller is. And he's fun to watch right now.
Yeah, here's the other thing, that there was a big change that occurred today, guys. And this is, I guess, one of those more subtle things that you notice when you study a lot of tape. Have to go back and look at this tape. But what's happened now is there was 4 or 5 games out there. Teams around the league are seeing it. Until this week, because the Bears don't shadow receivers. Kyle stays on the left side. Johnson stays on the right side. Some teams will move their best corner around. Teams were attacking them evenly. Today, for the first time, the Panthers wanted no part of Kyle Fuller. They tried to stay away from him as best they could. They worked the left side of the field, and you're going to see more and more of that in the coming weeks because he's just playing. And, hey, quarterback, you cannot play the position perfectly. I mean, he's going to get beat. Everybody's going to get beat eventually. These guys are all really good, but Kyle Fuller is playing at about as high a level as a cornerback can play right now. We've got to take a quick commercial break, but Max is dialing us up from Milwaukee. Max, you're going to be first on the other side, as well as everybody else lined up on the phones. We do have one line open. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. Give us a call if you don't want to talk, but you want to text. It's the same number. That will get you into the tech zone, brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Guys, a quick break here, and then back. We'll get you updated on the scores as well. You've got the score.
We're back with more of the Prop Swap Postgame Show with Hub Arkish and Patrick Manley on Sports Radio 670 The Score, presented by PNC Bank, the official bank of the Chicago Bears.
Welcome back, everybody, to our Prop Swap Postgame Show. We're presented by New Mail. Patrick Manley is alongside. I am Hub Arkish. We're taking your phone calls at 312-644-6767. And as promised, we're headed up to Milwaukee now to welcome Max into the show. Max, how you doing?
Hey, guys. Appreciate you taking my call. This is a follow-up. I believe it was Mike in Evanston, or somebody in Evanston, that just made heat praise on Kyle Fuller. It seems like at this point, referees are really having trouble officiating his game. It really feels like he's done worked hard to adapt to 2020 version of defensive football. But refs just keep getting it wrong. Do players and coaches have any mechanism to talk to referees before the game, during the week? Do they have any recourse to try to get these officials to see the plays the way they really are? I mean, do they watch film? How does that work?
They do. So what will happen is normally the coaches will send in plays to the officiating crew or the office, wherever it is. I think it's in New York, about plays they have questions on, like plays like that happen. I know special teams-wise, we would, you know, turn things into Dave Tobe or whatever that we thought maybe was questionable, and we'd go through it, and he would send it off to them. And it's one way to help the referee learn the game as well, a little bit more of how you do play the game or what you're trying to do in certain situations. And there's other things that referees just need to be better at. And it's interesting now, I'm reading through Twitter while we were at that break, is I think Eddie Jackson, Danny Trevathan both got out there and were pretty critical about the referees during this game. So they're not happy with it, but there is ways to do it. I mean, they're working on it every week, and the teams send in plays they're not happy with and want to get responses from the office of, say, hey, why did you call this? Or we disagree with this. And sometimes they come back and say, yeah, we messed up, or a guy missed a call. But most of the time they say, no, we were right, we were right. But that's the way it works.
You know, Max, I think it is worth noting that it comes from a good place in the beginning, and that the league and officials are trying to protect players. They're trying to limit the traumatic head injuries, and that's a good thing, and it's understandable. Unfortunately, the way they've created these rules is that you have a certain number of officials in the NFL that as soon as they see a violent hit, they're just throwing a flag. They're not looking to see if it's a legal hit or not. They just say it was a big hit. And they're going to throw a flag. And that serves no purpose because the hit's already taken place. The damage was done. So at least get the call right. And Kyle Fuller is an example of a guy who has obviously been coached right. He's obviously focused on. He is you can see it. He is purposely doing it right, using his shoulder, using the side of his forearm. He is not hitting him in the head. He's hitting at the shoulder. He's hitting at the hips. And yet, because he's a big hitter and because he's a very physical football player, he's being punished for it. So, my hat's off to his teammates for sticking up for him. I would be careful because it's only going to cost you money and not change anything. but it's good to see them stepping up and making the comments anyway. Let's see, Pat. I think next is we got back-to-back Chris's. It's Chris on the north side first. Chris, how you doing?
Hey, Hub. You know, I always appreciate your insight. I'm a first-time caller calling into you, man. I love hearing you, brother.
I appreciate it.
Now, I want to talk about our line play today, our offensive and defensive line. I really believe these guys won it today, especially our O-line. I saw them pick up a lot of stunts, which they had a lot of trouble in against Atlanta, and I really like that. The only guy I didn't really like too much today on the offensive line was Leno. I saw him several times turn his shoulders, but for the most part, Montgomery was able to pick his holes. He was able to be patient with his blockers, and that's something I didn't see this year too much, was him being able to have patience for his blockers to set him up. And the O-line played a great game, and our defensive line, our whole defense was ready today. And I think that call against Jalen Johnson, the offensive wide receiver had his extended, and Jalen had his hands towards the ball. I think it could have gone either way, but you know, it was a home field call. But I love the way our line played on both sides of the ball. I just want to get your take on that. Thanks for taking my call.
I'm giggling a little bit over here.
We started the show of talking about the O-line and how they struggled in the run game. I think maybe what he's talking about is the patience of David Montgomery. He had two runs, I think, which is decent runs, where he had to wait and cut back because there were no holes there. That wasn't because, you know, he was waiting for the hole to happen. The O-line did an okay job blocking up front for the pass protection. I think they gave up zero sacks. There's a little bit of pressure here and there, but it wasn't their best game O-line-wise. Not at all. I mean, you look at the rushing stats, not very good, not what we want to see, not what we expected. And then, you know, the D-line, yeah, they played great. I mean, that's the simple answer to that. They played great. They did what they're supposed to do, four sacks, causing the game-winning turnover for Teddy Bridgewater to throw that interception. So the D-line played great, but I think he must have been watching a different Bears offensive line than we were watching of, or doing something different during when the offense was on the ball.
Yeah, I think Chris was watching the same game Jonathan Vilma was today. I said this last week. I don't remember. It may have been John. I really liked Jonathan Vilma until today, and I almost never critique sports broadcasters because I broadcast games and you don't like it when somebody's second guessing you, but this isn't second guessing. Today was just a funky broadcast. I don't understand what he was seeing a lot of the time. I'll tell you, folks, I don't know if you have the same issue I do, but what I do eventually, and I shouldn't tell you to do this because, as I said, I call games too. Eventually, I just turn the sound down because it starts to get in the way of the game. And so That was interesting also. I do want to tell everybody, though, about the hottest new sports betting tool out there, and it was started by two guys from right here in Chicago. This incredible website is PropSwap.com. It's like eBay, but it's for sports bets. You can buy and sell betting tickets with other people. Why? Because you can find the best odds in the country purchasing tickets directly from other gamblers. You're looking for a ticket on the Bears to win it all? It's on PropSwap. Come join us. Check out PropSwap.com right now or download the PropSwap app. PropSwap is where America buys and sells sports bets. And next up, we got a lot of regulars we're developing here. Pat, I know we've been hearing from Reimar down in Savannah, Georgia quite a bit, and Reimar is checking in from Savannah again. Reimar, how you doing?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Thanks for
We're coming. 5-1. Here we are complaining, but that's what we are. We're Bears fans. I also love lots of observations today about, you know, play calling, defense. Everything you're saying is spot on, so I love it. I want to go big picture. Trade deadline, November 3rd. What are the moves that we could do? Are there any opportunities to upgrade? You know, we say, you know, people will say, let's trade for a wide receiver, deep threat. Let's get, you know, let's get Leno gone. And that's great, but that's not necessarily practical. What do you all sense from the front office that we can do?
Hub, I'm going to leave this one up to you because you know all the stuff that, you know, you can do with trade deadlines and things like that. Maybe you know more players out there that would be on the trading block for some of these teams that, you know, now you know that there's only one winless or winless team, which is the Jets now, but any of the teams trying to, you know, clean out some roster space or some cap space for the future.
Yeah, and you know, we're actually still about, what, 3 weeks away, and so, you're looking for some really quality players who have contract issues coming up. Next year is going to be a really interesting year in free agency because for the first time in 11 years, the cap is going to be reduced by almost certainly a full 10%. You're going to lose $20 million in cap space. That's going to strain almost everybody. But I do have to, I'm sorry if it's a cop-out, but I got to sit down and go team by team and start looking for guys who could become expendable because of their contracts. That's number one. Number two, any unhappy campers out there looking to force a deal at the two positions that you're talking about right now, offensive line and wide receiver, there's nobody that pops to mind. And the reality is there's enough teams that have needs on the offensive line in particular that you're probably going to overpay if you try and do it at the trade deadline. What the Bears cannot afford to do is trade a number one pick. They haven't had one in a couple of years. You got to hang on to that pick. And I don't care if it's in the mid or late 20s, if you do end up winning 11 or 12 games, that's still a place where you can get a left tackle, where you can get a premier wide receiver. Those are the first two things that come to mind. By the time we get to the end of the year, there'll be some other things. So, you know, Reimar, I get the question, and there has been more trade activity in the NFL in recent seasons than what we were used to for decades. But in this particular season, and then, you know, you've also got the COVID issue, and I don't want to overstate it, but, you know, what if you parted with serious assets? You know, you gave up a second or third round pick, and you get a guy, and through no fault of his own, suddenly he gets infected, and you're without him for 2, 3, 4 weeks. It's a riskier time. Injuries are always a risk, but I think the whole pandemic adds an extra layer to it. You also know that the rules are if you acquire a player, they have to go through a 5-day testing protocol, so you're almost guaranteed to miss at least one game with them. I just don't know that trades are going to be the answer for anybody this year. So, Pat, you'd love to see it. But at the end of the day, the good ones, either you're going to overpay for them at this point in the season or they're not moving, you know. So it's unlike other sports where you see, you know, great players in baseball because you're talking about teams looking to rebuild the roster, you know, with all those extra picks. It's just not really done that way in football. The trade deadline doesn't have the same significance, I don't think, that it has in baseball.
No, I don't think it does either. And, you know, the only position, I guess, if you look at a hole right now, a huge hole on this team would be the left guard position. Could you find a veteran that's out there for whatever the price could be of a 7th-round, 6th-round pick that maybe they want to move on from that could come in and fill the spot and be a little more secure? That would be the only position that I would see them potentially making a move like that. The trade deadline, it's tough. And it's hard for guys to come in and learn a new offense during the season, to learn a new defense. Well, defense, I think you can do it a little bit easier. But just to learn a new offense during the season is very difficult to do. It takes many weeks. You know, that's why there's that long training camp and OTAs and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, you see it with rookies, you see it with veterans. We had Greg Olson on this morning talking about moving to Seattle and how difficult that was of as many years as he was in Carolina, moving up there and having to learn that offense and learn, you know, learn the teammates and learn all that new stuff up there.
Pat, let me update everybody on the rest of the NFL action before we take a quick break here. The Lions win 34-16 to climb to 2-3. But let us not forget, if DeAndre Swift doesn't drop a pass with 10 seconds left, they're 3-2. The Bears are 4-2. DeAndre Swift today, 14 carries for 116 yards and two touchdowns. The Lions next time around are not going to be a laydown. They're not as bad as people keep thinking. The Bears, of course, 23-16 winners in Carolina. The Steelers, 38. The Brownies, 7. I'm sorry, Todd, but the Brownies are not for real. They're improved, but they're not for real in that AFC North. The Ravens, on the other hand, just get by the Eagles, 30-28. That's a little misleading. The Ravens all over the Eagles earlier. The Eagles put up 22 points in the fourth quarter to make this one look close. It really wasn't. The Giants get off the schneid with a 20-19 win over Washington in New York. Both those teams 1-5 now. The Denver Broncos, with 6 field goals in the first 3 periods, beat the Patriots in New England 18-12. The Patriots are 2-3. They had 3 more positive COVID tests this morning. We're starting to see that the Patriots are not going to be the Patriots without Tom Brady and all those guys who opted out at the beginning of the season. The Atlanta Falcons get off the schneid in the first game under interim head coach Raheem Morris. They go into the Vikings and kick their butts 40-23. It was 20-0 at halftime. Vikings are just as bad at 1-5 as the Falcons are. The Colts fall behind early again, 21-0, but then score 21 unanswered points. They win 31-27 over the Bengals. The Titans, all they could ask for, they win 42-36 in overtime, but the Texans had eschewed an extra point earlier in the game to go for 2, which they did not get, would have won it in regulation had they taken the extra point. Titans get it in overtime, 42-36, to stay undefeated. The Bucs are now up 21-10 on the Packers with 4:35 left in the second period. We talked about this one, had a feeling the Packers could be in trouble down in Tampa Bay today. And the Dolphins are out all over the Jets, 21-0. I've had a bunch of texters who want to make sure that all of our listeners know today, Patrick, a 4-touchdown day for Trey Burton and Adam Shaheen. Trey Burton had a touchdown rushing. He also had a touchdown catch in the Colts' big comeback. Adam Shaheen, 2 catches for 47 yards, both touchdowns, one a 43-yarder. Sorry, guys, you can't rewrite history. They still weren't very good here.
No, they weren't.
I don't think anybody's going to be going home today saying, I wish we still had Adam Shaheen. No offense, nice kid.
No. And then after you read all those scores off Hub, I just let you know I'm 3-0. And my 3 picks in the early games today. So
he's smoking.
So far, so good. I'm still hot. I got one more tonight. We'll see what happens.
Patrick Manley is smoking. He was 3-0 last week. So got to keep an eye on those Bet Rivers plays of the week. We're going to take a quick break here, guys. 312-644-6767. When we get back, Phil will be next in Barrington. We got more Bears talk right here at the Score.
Third down and go out of the timeout. Bears load up. Backs on either side of Foles. Receiver out to the left, one to the right. Now they move Allen Robinson out of the backfield. They'll stack him to the right with Anthony Miller. 5 of the play clock. Third and goal. Foles looking it over. 2-1. I don't know if he got it. That's a flag again.
How can you come from a timeout?
Out of a timeout.
We're lucky we got that touchdown. I'll just say that.
What caused that? What caused the delay?
I guess it was a little loud. I don't know. You know, I guess it was a little loud.
We're back with more of the Prop Swap Postgame Show with Hub Arkish and Patrick Manley on Sports Radio 670 The Score, presented by PNC Bank, the official bank of the Chicago Bears.
Matt, we're not buying that. I'm sorry, Matt.
Hub, that's calling out the player right there. That is calling out the player. That's what that was.
And that's something that he is famous for not doing. But,
right.
I mean, you know, come on. There was nobody in the stadium. There was a few people in the stadium. But, yeah, I just wonder which player is calling out. I guess he must be calling out Nick Foles.
It's got to be Nick Foles is what I think it is. It has to be, because I'm sure they had the – you know, he probably gave him the entire, you know, the play plan and said, all right, get this done. They show, you know, get it all. And that's just him calling out the player. That's a little shocking because you haven't heard that from him yet. That's pure frustration. That, you know, he's putting it on the players now and saying, hey, we've got you guys prepared and you guys didn't execute. That's a very interesting piece of sound there. We'll see where that goes with some of the players' reactions and maybe if he walks back from that or does he double down on it next week or, you know, in the next press conference.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting more interesting. We're going to get a little bit more sound from the Bears locker room in a minute because apparently we're not the only ones very unhappy with the offense, and this is going to come from an interesting source. But before we get to that, I know Phil's been waiting, I think, out in Barrington. And, Phil, I want to get to you so you don't have to hold any longer. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I say, can you hear me okay? Because I'm a little staticky with you guys.
Well, we're hearing you.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So, Hub, I heard your comments earlier about, you know, on Twitter you posted that, you know, don't throw the ball here. And I texted my neighbor saying, just run a play-action rollout. If the guy's not wide open, slide, let the clock run, make them use their timeout. And, you know, the whole thing, you know, and I'm a dedicated listener to the station. I'm in my car all day long. I listen to you guys and hear the conversation about the running game all the time. And I just don't know that it's not – I don't think that Nagy doesn't want to run the ball. I think he really does. I just don't think he knows when and how to. It's like it's too predictable. And, you know, he gets into situations where he's putting this team in longer downs on third down long that it's because of the fact that he's just become to the point where, you know that he wants to run the ball. He's running on predictable downs. Change it up. And I totally believe that you can throw the ball on first down, which does create open avenues for the play action on second down. He had a second and inches in the, I believe it was in the fourth quarter, and he gets in shotgun and hands the ball off to Montgomery for a 1 yard gain. That's the time when you want to run play action and go for the deep kill. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I just feel like, and Hub, I know you really like him, and I'm buying all the stuff that you say about him about, you know, I think he's got like 25 wins now in less than 2.5 years as the Bears head coach. I believe that you can't be a great coach and not get up, you know, do what he's done. He's done that. But as a play caller, I'm just getting increasingly frustrated. And I think he's part of the reason why Mitch is sitting on the bench right now. That's a whole other topic, and we won't even get into that. But I don't know how you guys feel about it. I just feel like he could be more selective on how he chooses to run the ball and the formations that he's running in. It's just increasingly frustrating to me. I'd really like to hear your comments on that.
Well, Phil, before I give it to Pat, it's interesting because I'm getting the tone of this both from some of our callers and our text line. You just said, you know, I really like him. I do like him personally. He's a nice man. I don't know of too many analysts who've been quite as critical of him as I have in terms of his game management, in terms of questioning what he's doing with his offense, in terms of questioning how he's using his coaching staff. The quarterback thing I can't hang on him because I don't know if either of these guys can play quarterback, or maybe he's got two guys who are good quarterbacks that he's not getting the most out of. The point that I continually make is that you've got people, you know, fire him, get rid of him, do this, do that. He is 25-14. That is how you measure head coaches. You cannot ignore that. You cannot take it away. If you want to say he's just been lucky and that's all there is to it, I'm not necessarily going to argue. I don't know. You know, I'm not looking to argue the point. I just try and make the point that when you've got a guy who is doing some things right, now I've got my partners are ex-players, and they've applauded the culture, what he's done, his players. We know the players love playing for him. You have a successful head coach. Maybe he's not a good head coach, but he's a successful head coach. And so my approach, Pat, is you focus on what he can do to fix what's wrong. It doesn't make sense to sit here and say, let's get somebody else, because there's not a lot of somebody else's that have had the success that he's had in his first 2.5 years, 2.25 years.
No, I'm with you. And you're right. You judge coaches on their records, right? And he's also a young coach. This is his first time being a head coach. So he's got to improve as well. You know, he's not a rookie anymore, but he's still young. You know, he's a young guy too, so I give him a little benefit of the doubt. I just want to see some better decisions in the end game decision making that we've talked about last week and this week again. And I want to go back to the caller talking about, you know, Matt Nagy really not knowing the run game. And he said he doesn't know when and how to run the ball. That might be a good point. I mean, he's on his second run game coordinator, Mark Helfrich last year, Juan Castillo this year. You know, Harry Hiestand, he lumped into that as well, which, you know, how I feel about Harry Hiestand. So maybe that's something he needs to get better at doing as well, is learning how to run the ball and when to run the ball. And that could be part of his problem too, that's why it's not working well, because this is his offense. He was brought here to score points, and they're not scoring points, and not running the ball is the problem. And how about you go back to what you're saying about liking him? Yes, he's a very likable guy. I like him a lot, and I do think one of the hardest things for coaches to do is to get players to play hard for you as a head coach. Mm-hmm. And he's got that thing done. And now he's just got to figure out the rest of the football and the game management and figure out this run game.
I'll tell you what we're going to do here, guys, because I'm off schedule a little bit, but I think this will work out fairly well. I mentioned that there's somebody else who's not very happy with the Bears offense. And so we've got a little soundbite here from the Bears locker room. It's going to run about 2 minutes. We're going to play it for you. We're going to go to a break out of it because we've got to pay some bills. And when we get back, I'm anxious to hear your comments and your thoughts about this. Let's hear what Nick Foles thinks of the Chicago Bears offense coming out of their 23-16 win over the Carolina Panthers.
Well, I first say, would you rather lose pretty or win ugly? I think that we'd rather win ugly. You know, I think that's the common thing. So I think it tells you a lot about our team. Is this who we are offensively? We want to improve. We want to get better. We want to have rhythm. But ultimately in the NFL, it's about winning games. It doesn't matter how you do it. It just matters that you get it done. If you put up 50 points and you lose a game, those 50 points don't mean anything. So right now we're winning games. We're playing together as a team. We can improve. I think that's exciting. If we were winning these games and playing perfect and they were this tight and we're playing perfect, what do you do? Where do you improve? I mean, then we're sitting here as like, man, I guess when we just, you know, play those teams, it's just not going to happen. Well, right now we have a lot of areas to improve offensively once again, but we are figuring out ways to, you know, score and get points and move the ball and do those things. We can fix what we're doing. It doesn't happen overnight. Offenses don't get fixed overnight. Sometimes they don't get fixed throughout the course of years. You've seen in the NFL, there's been teams that have been bad offensively for a very long time. We're not one of those teams. We're a team that's young offensively. We're growing. We're getting to know each other. We're figuring out who we are, and we're doing it at the right time. And as a team, we're winning these games. And I think that's what's important. Now, we're not going to get complacent and say, hey, man, we're 5-1. This is it. No, like we're sitting there in the locker room after the game talking through it. Hey, we got to be better here. This is what we got to do here. Communication here, route running here. Hey, we got to be able to run the ball here. We know that. I know you're all going to ask those questions. We know that. And that's what's exciting, because we don't have to have y'all say, hey, you doing this? Hey, we know. But we also know that we're going to improve because we believe in one another. And that's what great teams do. Great teams find a way to win a game. Bad teams win with prettiness. Great teams win no matter how it takes. So I'm proud of our guys. I think we're continuing to improve. Are we where we want to be? No, we're not where we want to be. But I'm excited about our offense. I'm excited about the guys that are there. I like the communication that's happening on the sideline. I love the passion of the players. Most important, they care. And we're bonding. We're getting to know each other. That's football. Like, you don't just go out there and play football. You got to care about the man next to you to make those plays. So I like where we're at. I know we're going to improve. I believe in our staff. I believe in our players. And I'm really grateful to be a part of this organization.
All right, Patrick, I lied. We're going to make a quick comment here before we go to break.
All right.
I hadn't heard all of that. And I'm not going to say a lot, but there was one thing that Nick said that I'm sorry it's not true. And I know it's in the passion, the heat of the moment. Actually, on offense, they're not young and they're not improving. Okay, I mean, and that was one of the points that he tried to make. Now, everything else he said, I love the passion. We'll see. I'm curious what your thoughts are, and then we'll take a quick break. But this is what they need to understand. What could be excuses are not. This has been ongoing for a couple years now, and that's the ultimate frustration that I have, is that this isn't young kids making mistakes that they shouldn't know better. They're a middle-aged offense, and they're not improving.
No, I think the biggest thing I took away from it is that he acknowledges all the mistakes. I mean, he knows that it's not good enough, that there's that many mistakes, that they're not that good. You know, that the wins are wins, but still offensively, they're not that good. And, you know, it is. It's right after the game, so he's got all that passion and fire still going. So, you know, he's a little heated up. But if that's my leader of my offense talking that way and also being honest about the offense and honest saying he's talking to guys in the locker room about what their problems are, what they need to do, I'll take it. That's a good way to have it, a good guy to have talk about these issues. So that was good to hear. And it's just they're not good enough, and they know it, and they got to get better, but we'll see.
All right, guys, 312-644-6767. Dial us up. We want to hear what you think about it. It's the Prop Swap post-game show presented by Newmail right here at 670 The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.